Spring has sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards. Save big
money at Menards. The tourism department from Oklahoma called me and said, hey, we're going to send you out to California to be on the Home and Family Show to do a little cooking segment. I said, all right, suits me. Well, you need to call this in-house chef out there. She's going to explain to you what's going to happen. But we need you to cook it in the Dutch ovens. And the first words out of her mouth were, what protein are you using? And it was phone silence. Because I'm thinking, really don't know what this lady's talking about. I said, ma'am, I take vitamin B and vitamin C. I said, that's about it. My name is Kent Rawlings. I've been a cowboy and a chuck wagon cook for over 30 years, cooking for ranches all across America. You might have seen me on the Food Network or alongside my beautiful wife, Shannon, on our YouTube show, where we share cowboy cooking from the trail. But now we're going to take you behind the scenes to real campfire conversations. Join us as we share humor, cowboy wisdom, and stories full of history, heart, faith, and of course, a little fire. So grab you a cup of coffee, pull up a chair, and welcome to the podcast. Morning, all y'all. Evening, afternoon, whatever time of day it is.
I feel like we haven't sat down and talked to you all for a while, but we actually have. We had just pre-recorded a couple episodes because we had to leave and be on the road for a couple weeks.
Yeah, like it was 2.5.
You were up in Ohio.
Yeah, big city of Kidron, Ohio, at Layman's Hardware Store. Probably had about 350 people show up.
So if you guys went to that, thank you.
There was a lot of podcast listeners.
I know that was a really fun time. That's always cool to go up to that store. If you haven't been up there, it's wild.
Yes, it is. Then it was fly back to Amarillo from Cleveland. You'd went home, drove back to Amarillo.
Yeah.
And then get on a plane the next morning, fly to Houston. And what was we doing down there?
We were filming the third and fourth episode of season 3 already, yes, of Cast Iron Cowboy.
Yeah. And if y'all hadn't checked out the first one, you can go back and get that. But season 2 will premiere in September.
So that was wild. We went to Louisiana. We did a ranch in Texas. And it was interesting. When we went, it was the Texas one, we did a fish fry.
Yeah.
And there were a lot of like moving components to putting this dish together. And I remember we had like a little meeting beforehand to like get
team meeting,
get in the groove. And it got me thinking, because probably lately, some of our biggest questions, Kent, that we get from fans is, what are your tips for cooking for a crowd? And we've talked about this before. I think we even talked a little bit about it in a previous podcast. We've done it a little bit in some of our cooking videos. But I think what we do is we take it for granted, what we know and like the process. And we just think, well, it's like, what's the big deal?
Pretty
like,
simple.
It's cooking for a crowd. Like, so we thought, hey, we're listening to you all.
Yep.
And we are doing a dedicated episode on our tips for cooking for a crowd. And when we say cooking for a crowd, like, yeah, we have cooked for 500 people at a time.
750 at once.
Right. But this is, I mean, that will apply if you guys happen to be crazy enough to sign up for something like that. But this is also going to be for if you're in the backyard. Barbecue season is coming up. Backyard barbecues.
Yes.
So we're just going to share some tips to make your family and friend gatherings a little more seamless and less stressful.
Yes. I mean, you just got to look at it as, hey, I can plan this out. I can do this. It's going to be a great success. But when that happens, you're always going to be on their list to always cook again. A good cook never loses his job.
And you did a kind of a wild, large cooking several years ago for the Boy Scouts, right?
Oh my gosh. They called me from Houston and they said, hey, we'd love for you to come down here. We're going to have about close to 3,000 Boy Scouts. And I said, how many? He said, 3,000. And we'd like to run them by there in groups of 300, give a little group of history about the wagon, and then feed them something that's really simple that you would have had going down the trail so many years ago. And I said, how about beans?
So how did you do that?
1 pound of beans feeds 10 people.
Okay.
Then you just do the math. So I knew this about 4 weeks ahead of time. Whenever I had a little time at home, I'd cook me up 10 pounds of beans.
Oh, so you did pre-prep?
Some of them.
Okay.
You have to be really careful with beans if you've got like any kind of meat in them, like a ham hock, a bacon, something like that. Because if you don't chill them quick and cool them, they can sour. So I'd made a bunch, froze them, you know. Drive down to Houston. It's hot, as it always is in Houston when I'm there. And I figured I'm going to have to cook enough beans on site for about 800 people more. You know, I had the freezer at home full of aluminum foil pans full of beans, you know, and each one would feed about 75 to 100
people.
And
you froze them?
Yeah.
Or just chilled them?
Froze them.
Okay.
So I get down there and I got every bean pot in the world going. I mean, got them all. And I got this big old steam table that you can keep stuff warm in. And so I started thawing them out when I got there that night, you know. Then I got up. This is going to start like 10 o'clock in the morning. So I get out there, set the wagon up the night before, get out there at 2, go to cooking beans.
Oh, gosh.
And these kids would line up, you know, and come by. You give them a little history. They'd get just a little old 4-ounce sample cup of beans. Mm-hmm. And this one little kid, he probably 9, 10 years old. I never will forget him because he had a little red afro. That's the reddest hair I've ever seen in my life. And he walked up there and he said, are them pork and beans? I said, no, they're pinto beans. Are they Bush's beans? I said, no, they're just regular pinto beans. He looked at me and he said, I haven't never eaten a bean that didn't come out of a can. I said, you can today. And the little feller ate 10 of them cupfuls, just kept coming back. He said, best thing he ever ate in his life. And then he went over into one of them pine trees that park, and he began to swell up like a dead carp in the sunshine. And I knowed what was going to happen, you know. And we got through about 7 o'clock that evening, you know, and it was a long, long day. And they was all out there in these little pup tents in this park, you know.
So they were all camping on site.
Oh, they had to camp on site. And the head scout master guy come over, and he said, Ken, I just want you to know that if you'd like to stay here with us tonight, you can. I said, no, I got to hit the road. And I said, as many beans as them kids eat out there and them pup tents ain't got no end in them, they're going to damage the ozone later for the morning. I'm going to go ahead, head out of town, you know. I didn't take so much of it for granted, the cooking, but I took for granted some of the history. Those kids had never seen a chuck wagon, you know. Never knew that part of it.
Yeah, right? It is important, like taking the wagon on the road, yeah, and doing these different events that we've done over the years. You know, we see the wagon every day, yeah, but it is something very unique.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And also the cooking process and the serving process.
I mean, there was a lot of planning went into that meal 4 and 5 weeks ahead of time.
This is a perfect lead-in you just gave us, because our first segment tip is plan like a boss.
That's right.
Because that is going to be the most helpful thing that you do for your party coming up. It's just planning.
Yeah.
And the biggest thing to start with is you need to kind of reverse engineer it. So what time are you serving? And we got to plan backwards from that, right? The other big, big, big thing is your oven space.
Yes.
Because depending on, we're going to go through this a little more detail. What are you cooking? What time does it need to come off for serving? And is it a warmed item that needs,
yeah,
to be hot?
Whether it's in the oven or on the grill or on the smoker, how much room you got?
I think that's the biggest thing that's going to really go into your planning, yep, of your meal. Also, holding space.
Yep.
What kind of warmers are you going to be using? Is your oven going to be a warmer? Take that into consideration. Also, maybe consider your transport.
Yeah, I mean, if you're going to a spot to cook from a different location.
I think that everybody should have to come to the cook. That should be a rule,
that's
right?
That's true.
Also, we'll talk about kind of the things that can be done ahead of time. I'm a big, big, big fan of doing things the day before, the week before. You've even done a lot of things that we'll talk about where you've planned, like you said, with the beans, like, yeah, maybe even a month in advance, and you, yeah, can freeze things. So those are all things, just little shortcuts that we're going to talk about to really make cooking not stressful.
Yeah,
right?
Make it easier.
Party. Was your largest cooking ever for 750 people?
Yes, Give Kids a World, 3 meals in a row.
And you cook steaks?
We cook chicken fried steaks.
Oh, chicken fried steaks.
Gravy, mashed potatoes, beans, bread, and cobbler. Next morning was breakfast and then a lunch.
Can you walk us through or just tell us, like, when you are looking at something that large of a scale, what's the first thing you consider when you're planning your menu?
Where am I going to get my help? And is it help I can trust? Somebody that I know that when you put them on the front line of fire, they ain't going to back up, you know. And I had good help for this. But we planned out the menu very precisely, knew the correct amount of groceries to go with. But we always add like 25 people when it's something that big. Smaller groups, I would say, well, I'm going to cook for 20, I'm going to cook for 25. You know, they were wanting 20 people. Because you never know. Somebody may drop a plate. Somebody may be a real big eater. And something you got to realize, you can never run out before you feed them all. Mm-hmm. It just looks bad on you. But we had everything planned down to the T from the time we arrived till the time we left the next day.
Did you make like a schedule? Like, did you write down on paper schedule?
We didn't write it down. Me and Jerry and Brian talked about it that day, that first morning when we set up, you know, what's going to be first, what's going to happen. We have two sets of big old deep fryers going, you know. How much oil is it going to take? When do we start, you know, to heat the oil? And when you have help, and it's like me and you at the wagon, you know what they're thinking. They know what you're thinking. There's no wasted time in there. It's all production, you know. And it's the same way cooking in the backyard or if you're in the house cooking for a group of people. You know, okay, Shan, you're going to cook dessert inside. I'm going to cook the meat outside. We know, like, if you need something, I can do it. I need something, you can do it.
That's a good point, because as we're coming into summer with barbecues, I forget that you can split your cooking places. It doesn't all have to be in the kitchen. What can get really stressful, and it also limits your space so much, because like a lot of you have one oven and you've got maybe a few different hot items, and then maybe you have your stovetop and that's kind of it, and some limited counter space. But if you can split your cooking items and set up, some of it's inside and then hit outside to really utilize that grill, not only for cooking, but it can be a warmer as well.
And something too, we're getting into with this time of year, the more you can cook outside, the less you're heating your house up.
Absolutely.
You know, because we've lived in them places, you know, where you didn't have much air conditioner and you get the oven going all day long. It's 7,000 degrees in the house when you walk in there. So if you can be able to cook all you can outside or cook it early in the morning inside, you know, it's going to save you time, but going to save you from sweating so much too.
And even if you guys are doing some Dutch oven cooking, I mean, go big and like do a Dutch oven cake or cobbler or something. But also remember, if you don't want to do a full cooking in a Dutch oven, you can use the Dutch oven to keep things warm.
Yeah.
Because the cast iron is thicker, it holds heat really well. Yeah. And so one tip I have is you don't even have to get a fire going. Preheat your cast iron Dutch oven in the oven. Let it get really hot. Take it out, put your warm food on it. How long would that Dutch oven stay warm?
Probably last good 45 minutes.
Or you could even set it on the stovetop and on a low heat, keep it warm. So then it's out of the oven. It's out of your way. It's just keeping something warm.
Before I ever had them steam tables, I'd take a Dutch oven lid and I'd put coals on it. And then I'd set a trivet, which is horseshoes that we have. And I'd put the lid on that. Coals are on it. I could get them as light or as heavy as I wanted. Then I could put the Dutch oven or the skillet on top there to keep some warm. And that way I could serve it. Now you had to be a little careful because people come through there and, you know, get a hold of a hot coal, but it keeps stuff warm for you without it being in the house.
And you can also, like, if you've got the grill going already, steal some of those coals from your charcoal grill and place it just on the top lid of that Dutch oven. And that the Dutch oven will circulate heat. You may not know that. But so just putting heat on top will keep that entire thing warm for, I mean, if you have coals on it, that'll stay warm for hours. So.
Oh, yeah. But just be careful if you've got bread or a meat in there that or something's crispy. If you got that lid on there tight, it's going to sweat, you know. That's without coals if you're just trying to store it that way. But if you've got heat on the top or heat around the bottom, It's nature's own crock pot.
Spring is sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
Let's talk about the main event.
All right.
Of any good party. That's the meat.
The what?
The meat or the protein, right?
Protein.
That's what, okay. I started calling it protein because when you started doing all your cooking competitions, all those chefies in the chefy world, they don't call meat meat. They call it the protein.
Yes.
So we're going to talk about the protein.
First time I ever heard that word brought up to me was 1996. The tourism department from Oklahoma called me and said, hey, we're going to send you out to California to be on the Home and Family show to do a little cooking segment. I said, all right, suits me. Well, you need to call this in-house chef out there. She's going to explain to you what's going to happen. But we need you to cook it in the Dutch ovens. And the first words out of her mouth were, what protein are you using? And it was phone silence. Because I'm thinking, really don't know what this lady's talking about. I said, ma'am, I take vitamin B and vitamin C. I said, that's about it. And you could tell it, she didn't think it was funny at all, but I really didn't know what she was talking about.
Chefs can be serious
yes.
in their craft.
And she said, by protein, I mean, what type of protein would you like? Would you like beef protein? Would you like pork protein? Chicken protein? I said, ma'am, whatever you got out there, I'll work with. And we were doing sparkling potatoes out there that day,
okay.
which are potatoes, Sprite, bacon, garlic, onion, little jalapeno.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, ma'am, I'll just take bacon. And she said, what kind?
What?
When she said, what kind of bacon? I'm thinking, this lady knows how to shop. And at that time,
so are you thinking like thick cut?
Yeah. Right?
Like what kind of, or
at
like
that time,
smokes?
I said, Wright's. Thick cut bacon,
oh,
hickory smoked.
Okay.
She said, no, what type of bacon? I said, I just told you the type, ma'am. She said, do you want it beef, pork, chicken, or turkey? And a red light went off in the back of my head.
Yep.
And I said, ma'am, the only kind of bacon that's ever been made, that's supposed to have been made, was pork. Pork made bacon. Chicken made Sunday dinner, and turkey made Thanksgiving, and beef made steak. She said, well, the protein you're going to use will be bacon. I said, it better be pork. So you got protein on the list, Shannon.
I have protein, and we're talking about, we're going to talk about good old-fashioned protein. Now.
Yes, best kind.
No, yes. Our kind of go-tos are the basics.
Yep.
We've done a lot of brisket, different cuts of steak. We didn't do, and this is mainly on the wagon, we didn't offer a lot of chicken. And why was that?
Well, it's hard to keep really health-wise standards for cooking and hold it a long time.
And we're talking about with large-scale cooking.
Yeah, I'm talking like 400 or 500 people.
And we were in like, you know, we weren't in a kitchen.
No.
So we didn't do a lot of chicken and pork.
Yeah, we did quite a bit of pork chop.
And that's a great money saver,
yeah.
especially nowadays. Look at your, if you are going to do chicken, which is not a problem if you're at home, just, you know, with the family, look at thighs instead of chicken breasts.
So much more flavor
better
and
flavor.
They're cheaper.
Yep. Better flavor, cheaper. Pork instead of steak. You can do a pork steak, pork chop. Ribs are great.
Pulled pork.
Or pulled pork. So instead of a brisket, get that same effect by doing a pulled pork sandwiches.
Yeah. I mean, there's so many things you can put out there that's, you have to first look at if it's something that's going to take a longer cook, whether it be a pork butt or a brisket, how much time do you have? Some of that stuff is going to have to cook 8, 10, 12 hours, you know, to get it right.
When you were doing more catering,
mm-hmm.
how did you choose the meat?
Well, first of all, we got to look at the deal as meat was so much cheaper back then.
Yeah.
you know, and I had a big old smoker. I'd cook 40 briskets at a time. Briskets was anywhere from 10 cents to 41 cents a pound. Now they like gold, mm-hmm. you know. I would offer a menu to people, and I'd say, steak is this price. It's New York strip or ribeye, two different prices. There's brisket at this price. There's pork chop, and there's catfish.
Aside from the pricing, was there any other strategy you had?
If it was for a really, really large group, I liked to do the brisket back then because I could cook it ahead of time, like 2 days ahead of time. I would cook mine in foil pans.
Okay.
You know, because I needed to have the broth and the moisture to serve with too. When they were in that foil pan, I would have, and they're deep, there would be that much broth in there.
How much is that? You know,
I'd say 2 inches of broth coming up through there.
Okay.
So I'd let them cool, wrap them tinfoil, stick them in a freezer. And then I could stack them after they froze because everything's frozen.
Did you leave them whole or did you cut them?
I would go ahead and slice them.
Okay.
That way, that's another job out of the way. You can do it either way, but when they're cooling off, just go ahead and slice some brisket, put them somewhere. You could even put it in a baggie if you ain't got nothing else. Make sure you save a little broth or something to go with it just to pull in there and zip it up. And that way, you keep it really moist. And then when I got there, all I'd have to do is warm it up. And I'd use it most of the time in them steam tables, but I have warmed some on ranches that I'd go to first night in, have meat frozen, put it in a Dutch oven, little beef broth, let it all warm back up.
How long before would you pull it out of the freezer to just let it sit and thaw?
The day I traveled, if it was like a 4, 5, 6 hour drive, I would just put them in the ice chest with no ice.
Okay.
You know, and when I got there, they would set out. Until I got ready to put them.
A few hours. And then for the home cook, just put them in the oven.
Yeah.
What temperature?
I'd say 170, 180.
So just at a warming temperature.
Yeah, I mean, you don't want to cook them anymore. You just want to warm them up.
And you would always keep the broth.
Yeah.
Like in a pitcher.
Yep.
While they were freezing, keep it. And then the day of that you're warming it, add it back in because that really helps keep in that moisture that's not drying out.
Because I'd always have like 2 pans that were sliced and a pan of chopped, you know, brisket.
Oh, okay.
When you're slicing, mine was always a tender. A lot of it fall apart anyway. So this gave me some options because a lot of people come through the line and they just want chopped. Little kids might just eat chopped. So you had that brisket, but there was 2 different ways of serving it.
If you weren't doing brisket, we did a lot of steaks.
Oh, yes.
And I know one tip with steak is do not offer different cooking doneness to your guests.
Yes, ma'am.
You are not a short order cook. So they get it the way it comes, which is, I would say, medium.
Rare.
You would do medium rare.
No.
I would say medium. I don't know. I guess judge your audience. What would be good?
I've had them very special occasion deals to where it's like, hey, I need you to come feed 12 people, you know.
That's
then
doable.
You can take a little order.
Sure.
You know, but you're out in the backyard, you got everything lined up. Say you got 25, 30 people come over. Aunt Agnes is in there in the kitchen.
Good old Aunt Agnes.
Yeah. And she said, I want my steak cooked well done. First of all, you got to tell Aunt Agnes, he done died once. We ain't going to kill him again. But for her, we love her so much. We got to cook that steak last.
Oh.
Cook all your others first. You can cook them to like medium rare and hold them if you want to do the time for that, and they'll warm up as they go, or you can pull them right off the fire. But cook hers last. That way, you ain't got nothing on the grill bothering you. You're just going to sit there and watch it.
Just that one just like jar.
Yeah, as it just disintegrates.
One of my favorite tips that you have taught me is how to hold a steak after you've cooked them. And like I said, we've done deals where we've cooked, when I've been with you, we've cooked 500 steaks for an event. So how do you possibly cook and serve that many steaks? And you have a great tip on how to hold them.
If you ain't got no warming trays, but you got a good ice chest. And I'm talking, we prefer a Yeti because that thing will hold heat. It even will continue to cook, but I preheat them. Not on the fire, nope. Just get you some good boiling hot water, pour in there, let it set about 15 minutes, dump it out, dry it out. Then when you put them steaks in there, they are hot. They will cook just a little more. That's why I like to cook things with, if I'm going to hold them in an ice chest, to the low end of medium rare. Put them in that ice chest. They may set an hour. because we're cooking so many. Y'all are pulling them out as we replenish, but them steaks are hot just like they come off the grill.
And so you will undercook them slightly to what you want and hold them because they'll rise in temperature as they sit there.
An ice chest is not just for cooling.
Just the name itself is like ice chest. Okay, great. We're going to put our Cokes in there and keep them cold. No. Use your ice chest as a warmer.
Yes, ma'am.
As a holding device.
But also as storage.
Yeah. When we're talking about steaks and you're serving, and this goes again, a little more larger crowd, think about how you're going to run your serving line. If it's a larger group, Kent and I would always serve the people ourselves because portion control is super, super important. And people, their eyes are way bigger than their stomachs and they will load up their plates and you end up having a lot of waste. So we know how much we bought and how much we prepared. So then we can serve accordingly. And steaks are a great way for people to serve themselves because people are only going to get one steak. Yeah. So it's easier to control. Brisket, when you're serving, unless you've got a lot, it's better to portion control that and serve that to people.
Yeah, about a third of a pound of finished meat per person.
Okay, so I just wrote some tips here for this. So boneless meat, you figure a half pound per person.
Yeah, pretty close to that.
Bone-in meat is 3/4 a pound per person. And just to note, this is interesting, brisket will shrink 35 to 40%.
As you cook it.
As you cook it. So how do we buy a brisket?
You look at a brisket and it's in there in the case. First of all, take your gold bars in with you because you may need it to purchase them.
And hope you sold off some of your 401k.
Yeah. But don't quit eating beef. 16 or 17 pound brisket and it hasn't been trimmed. Now you can pay the butcher to trim it. Or you can save money and trim it yourself. And we got some videos on that. It's easy to do with a sharp knife. Mm-hmm. But when you get that trimmed off, you will be amazed how much has left the brisket. He has lost weight like he has been on a GLP 1, 2, and 3 now. I mean, he has slimmed down. But you're going to lose roughly a third of your weight already.
Okay. After you trim it?
Yeah. I'm talking about a fat cap that's inch and a half thick, 2 inches, you know, and I'm not taking it all off.
Right.
The bottom side. As you cook that, it's even going to shrink just a tad bit more, you know. So I'm looking at a 16 pound brisket and I'm thinking.
At the grocery store, untrimmed?
Untrimmed.
Okay. 16 pounds will feed how many then?
I would always look at it and say, I'm going to get 10 servings out of that.
Okay.
Maybe 12. And most of the time I was a little long, but I wanted to be long. I didn't want to be short, you know. Yeah. And if it's chopped, even more than that. Because you're just talking like maybe a half a cup of chopped meat on a barbecue sandwich.
Yeah. You also have to consider who you're cooking for.
Yeah.
If like when we're on a ranch and it's cooler and we know that they've been working really hard, we're going to amp up our grocery amount. If you're cooking for your regular family, but you have a lot of kids or older people, they're probably not going to eat as much. So you can kind of gauge your menu that way and how much you need to prepare.
Spring is sprung and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards. Save big money at Menards.
So we've talked about the protein. Let's talk about sides because I am a big, big fan of prepping your sides beforehand. And usually that comes into play with cold sides. And as we're coming into summer, this is the perfect time to pre-prep some cold sides.
Yeah. The least you have to do in the heat is better.
Yes. And do these the day before because a lot of these... The longer they set,
better they get.
The better they get. So we're talking about any kind of salads, potato salad, pasta salads, coleslaw. Get creative with that.
Yeah.
The only thing is, if you're doing your salads like a green salad, you can do all of that chopping, all of that prep work. Even if you're doing hot sides, like a casserole of some sort that requires some prep work, slicing, dicing, do that the day before, put them in baggies, sit them in the fridge and hold them there.
Yep.
Then like your salads or your casseroles or whatever you need to prep the day of, dressing your salad right before you serve, that is going to take down so much stress. Oh, yeah. And we did that a lot in catering. In fact, when we'd prep a menu, we'd offer different menus to people and say which one to pick. And I would always be like, but you know, this one's really good because it would have more of the cold side.
The bologna sandwich is the best. You know,
we love a good ice cream sandwich, especially like I said, with barbecue season coming up, outdoor parties, everybody loves a cold side.
Yeah. And I mean, if you want to do, you know, hot sides or something to serve along or accompany it of meat, you know, baked beans are so easy.
Beans are a great go-to, right? Any kind of variation.
Yes. Whether they're boiled beans like a pinto bean or a black bean or anything like that, they're easy to prepare, usually in most sequences or country or elevation or altitude. You can cook beans pretty easy. You can even cook them the day before, then bring them out, put them in a crock pot, you know, and you're not taking up any oven space or anything like that.
A lot of casserole deals. We do one that I always put together. It's a hominy and green chili casserole. And a lot of these deals you can make the day before, cover, put in the fridge. And all you have to do then is slide it in and bake it. Another thing that I think people forget, or maybe it's just I forget a lot, crock pots.
Yeah.
Crock pots not only will cook your meal, but I have used them a lot just for warming. Yeah. I will cook something in the actual oven, pull it out, and then put it in the crock pot on warm, and it will hold forever.
Yeah, long time. Crock pots is a good thing.
What are your like favorite warm sides? Like if people really want to do a warm side that you think is easy or holds well?
Well, beans are the easiest
right, to
me, you know. I think it's one of them things that you put together and they just sort of take care of themselves. I would stay away from anything that might have to set before you serve if it's hot. Like deep fry some French fries and then you dump them all out there. You know, well, you're trying to keep them warm and you ain't got no room in the house no more and everything else is full outside. They will get a little soggy, a little soft before sometime serving time. Tater tots will hold up better than French fries.
Ooh, good tip.
Onion rings, if they're really good and crisp,
will hold longer.
They'll hold longer. But anytime you're going to store any of these things, like let's say the onion rings, don't stack them one on top of another. Try to stack them like cards in something.
You have said this before with chicken fried steak, especially. Once it comes out, don't stack them on top of each other. Stack them like cards with a piece of bread, a slice of bread in between each one, because that bread will absorb some of that moisture too.
Yeah, and you can keep them hot that way. They won't sweat.
So if you're looking at the order that you're cooking your items, your fried foods probably should come off the last thing before you serve, just because you want to keep that crunch.
I ain't got no problem with you cooking French fries. I do them a lot too on a grill, in a deep fryer. But have you a good place to store them that has a wire rack that they can be on?
Mm-hmm.
You got a little air circulation, but you're draining all that grease off of them or anything like that. And if you can keep them in the oven, just put them in a sheet pan, put it on 170, slide them in there, good to go.
And you really have to, you have to think about what your full menu is and where you can hold it and what's coming off. So let's say like, oh, I want to have brisket and steak and mashed potatoes and French fries and onion rings and all these things. It's like, well, that would be great, but you know what? That's just not feasible for your party. So you need to pick your main thing.
But if you do find that menu at a party, I want to go to that party. That's
like
good
a great
food
party
right
to
there.
Go to.
Yes.
So think about, like we said, reverse engineer. What's coming off? What do you need to come off the freshest before serving? And then backtrack. Usually that's going to be your meat, unless it was like a brisket, like we mentioned. Breads also usually need to come off the closest to serving if you're doing like a fresh roll or a biscuit. So think about that. In a lot of the catering deals we've done, we would go to Sam's Club, buy a big, huge thing of rolls. Maybe I would like heat them slightly little melted butter on top and then serve. So it gives it a little more of a fresher, fresher take on that.
I think your biggest enemy in all of this is not having a plan, number one, but number two, not having the space. But there's also another factor that if you're grilling and you're using a wood-fired grill versus gas, and I hope you are using wood-fired, you can't run out of heat. You can't run out of coals. You can't stop halfway through this cooking process and say, the burgers and the steak are going to be about 30 minutes late. I got to build another fire.
Yeah.
Make sure you have enough fuel to get that done.
Absolutely. Do you remember the one time that Bonehead, our beagle, got drunk off of a dessert?
Yes, and I've seen that happen twice in my lifetime.
So as we're going in, we're going to give you some tips on dessert. But we were, it was actually when we were hosting one of our cooking schools. And we had, all the students had made a bread pudding and a whiskey cream sauce. And everybody ate and we were cleaning up and doing dishes. And we had leftover cream sauce. And one of the gals didn't know what to do with it. Her name was Peggy. Yes. I won't say last names to protect the innocent.
How are you, Peggy?
And she just poured it out into on like a little like bush or something. It was quite a bit.
Yeah.
I think. And then we went to go doing dishes and clean up. Then we're all sitting around the fire talking. And I noticed Beeg was acting like pretty lethargic and kind of like bobbing around. And then she put it together. Beeg had gone over and licked up all of that whiskey cream sauce. And I think he got a little buzzed.
Yeah, I think he had a hangover next morning.
Poor guy.
You know, but I can remember another instance where bread pudding whiskey cream sauce come into effect. We were feeding a bunch of folks at Branson, about 450 people. Got to where it was really rush time for dessert, you know. And we'd made the mistake of people letting people put the cream sauce on their own bread pudding slice.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and that you got to regulate that stuff.
Yeah.
You know, and this little kid just kept coming back up there and he'd have an empty bowl and he'd say, my grandpa needs some more of this whiskey cream sauce. I bet he come five times, you know.
For grandpa?
Yeah.
Supposedly.
So I didn't think nothing about it. But at the time, too, we were so busy, it didn't get to boil long enough to take all the alcohol out of it.
Oh, no.
You know. So we got through. Next, we went to motel. Next morning, I was coming down the elevator and this guy stopped at one floor and got on, and he said, hey, Kent. I said, yes, sir. He said, I want to thank you. I said, I'm glad you enjoyed. He said, no, I want to thank you for giving my grandson his first hangover. And I said, what are you talking about? And he said, my grandson got drunk on that whiskey cream sauce. And I said, what'd he look like? Because, I mean, he's so many people, you know. And he told me, and I said, he come up there like I know five times, said he was getting it for grandpa. He said, I can give it one bowlful. So you get make sure you're going to boil it long enough to take the alcohol out of it.
That's one of those tips where portion control and serving the folks works better. But when we're talking about desserts, this is an easy, easy way to get around cooking for a crowd. And that is make a dessert menu that is make ahead for sure, because that will take away so much stress. And there are a ton of desserts to choose from.
Yep.
Pies, cakes, brownies, any type of a bar.
Yeah, homemade ice cream.
Ice cream too. Because that is going to make it so much easier. You can make those 2 days ahead of time in some cases.
Well, if you made that stuff 2 days ahead of time, we would have ate it before it ever got to the party. You better keep it under lock and key, you know what I mean?
Yeah. If you do want to do a hot dessert like a cobbler, which is a really popular dessert, especially in the Dutch oven, you just have to schedule your menu around it. So now you're looking at what's coming off first. Okay, you probably have your steak or your meat coming off. Maybe you have a bread. Okay, now you have a dessert that you have to think about. Yep. So it's just planning that. If you want a hot dessert, great. Then make sure you're doing more sides that were pre-prepped that you don't have to worry about. Maybe you did a brisket that's just sitting in the crock pot and you're doing brisket sandwiches. So then really the only hot thing you have to worry about is your dessert.
Yep.
So it just figures in the planning of that.
And if you're going to make a cold dessert, I'm going to recommend one.
What's that?
That is Shannon's Nanner Pudding out of the cookbook. Can be made ahead of time. It is a crowd pleaser. I guarantee you will be the hit of the party. People will forget the steak, the brisket, everything. and just go for the nanner pudding.
You know what we could do too? We'll put in the description of this video some sample menus that we have prepared that really level out a good menu that has good timing, that's easy to put together. And feel free to swap those out. But that may give you some inspiration for your next barbecue outdoor party.
And it's bulletproof. And send me an invitation.
That's right. If people are coming to your house, they're there for you to enjoy.
Yep.
Don't worry about the food as much. Of course, yeah, it needs to be good. But like, people are there for the community, first off, right?
And delegate.
Delegate.
Yes.
Great tip.
I mean, if Uncle Joe's bringing seven kids and they can eat you out of house and home, well, if they ain't cooks, have them mow the grass, you know? I mean, delegate.
You know, I love a good potluck.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, feel free to encourage people to bring something, maybe even something small, though. Like, if you want to kind of provide the majority of it, have them bring a little, even condiments or some, you know, something easy. And I think people like to feel like they're participating a little bit.
You know, when we were growing up, that's the way, when we had a lot of parties. And, everybody in the world had come from gathered around from a mile off to a half a mile off, you know, and everybody would bring something.
Yeah.
You know, and it was just the fact of getting all together, but you knew what all them old people were bringing. And
would they go there like old standbys?
Oh, yes. And it was, you knew it was going to be, I mean, knock a home run.
I also want to mention disposable items.
Yeah.
Feel free to use like foil pans instead of bringing out your casserole dish.
Yeah.
Use foil pans. Crock pot liners. So you're just like cleanup. Make sure you have to kind of figure cleanup into your menu plan as well. Like you want that portion to be easy, or you definitely hire on the help of everybody that's there. And you know, good people that you've invited, if they get in the kitchen afterwards and help clean.
Yeah. Cause there's a lot of them folks, and I've seen it happen. They sneak in, they eat your food, and then they leave before they wash the dishes.
That's sneaky.
Yeah. That's why we had the Beagle. He'd wash a lot of dishes.
If you have some pup taste testers, they will sure help in the kitchen. But pick that, you know, if you're looking at your menu, pick your star. Usually it's going to be the meat.
Yep.
Maybe not. Maybe it's going to be the dessert. Pick the star of your menu and work off of that. Work backwards from there. That's going to make things a lot easier. Get extra ice. That's always something that seems
we
always run out. If you are grilling or cooking in a Dutch oven, make sure you have plenty of fuel source because those are the things that seem to run out the most. Your hot coals and your ice, right?
Yes. And just make sure everybody has a good time. That's what it's about. I mean, you can let this be stressful, but if you got a good plan and you understand what's going on, you have a little knowledge about cooking, it's the best time ever.
Yeah. I think go easy on yourself. Like that's a, you know, don't take life too seriously. Don't take cooking too seriously. Invite the people that you love over and that's going to make the party.
Yeah. And don't use name tags on the table because if they got to have a name to know where they sit, they probably ain't going to do the dishes. So if you want to make name tags for the people that's coming, you just meet them at the door and you put on there dishwasher, yard cleaner, you know, mow the grass. Give them a title.
That's a good.
Yeah.
That's a
work good up an appetite.
Yeah, for sure. Well, we hope that that gave you some inspiration or a few tips to kind of de-stress when you're throwing your next backyard party, or maybe you're doing some larger scale catering. I think this will help give you some ideas of the things that we've gone through and the tricks that we've learned over the years.
Yeah. And just remember, it's about bringing everybody together.
Yeah.
And everybody, if you ask them, they'll bring a side, they'll bring a dessert, you know, and take a little pressure off of you. But just remember the tips and tricks that we've shared. Don't heat the kitchen up too much. Get outside when you can, you know.
And let us know if you have another tip that we missed, because I love learning tips from you all. Be sure, we'd love it if you could just give this video a like or leave a review. It really helps the channel grow.
Yes, it does. But it is with pride, honor, and privilege that I tip my hat to all our servicemen and women and all the veterans that have kept that old flag flying over camp. We commend you all and we lift you up in prayer daily. And folks, I'm telling y'all too, you're not alone in any of this. Even if we ain't there cooking beside you, we in there with you. And you're not alone there too, because God is with us all. We thank you so much for tuning in. We've had a great time. Hope y'all did. We'll see you down the podcast trail.
Pioneer.